Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 44, and it's been 4 weeks since the Steelers had a win, and they got one yesterday in Cleveland, Dave, a 24-9 win. Seemingly, as importantly, they came out of the game relatively healthy. Let me just ask you, were you impressed with the Steelers' win? Because a lot of Steeler fans seem to be disappointed because there weren't enough style points.
Well, you might have to walk me through how to talk about a win. It feels like it's been that long. Not sure how to write or act or talk or anything. David, I said on the Friday show that, and I think I wrote this on Twitter as well too, really feels like this is a no-win, or heading into this game, this was a no-win situation for the Steelers, and basically what I meant by that is, if you blow Cleveland out, you were supposed to blow Cleveland out. If anything less than happened, well, there you go. I've watched the game, you know, the original time and then two times since then. It's a no-win-win. If you want my honest opinion on it, it was a no-win-win. Did I like?
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, they would have had to win, 50-10, and they didn't. And they didn't get in the red zone. They didn't convert, the opportunities they had. Everybody wants to point to it being a one-score game in the fourth quarter. And, when we've seen this team lose games, I think it has been mischaracterized that they haven't put teams away. Well, the games they've lost, they've gotten blown out. I mean, the Dallas game is the only close game they lost. So it really hasn't been the case about putting teams away. But you watch this team, you watch any team long enough, you're nervous when a team's in a one-score game late because you've seen your team, whoever it is, blow these types of leads. The Steelers didn't blow it. The defense scored a touchdown, and they covered the point spread, if anybody cares about that. But, the final score, I think the final score was indicative of the dominance of the game.
Yes, but even though I'm not one that normally likes to point to the style points, a win is a win is a win in the NFL. You take those and you run on to the next week, regardless if it's against a undefeated team or a winless team. But I would have liked to seen a few more style points. Now, I wrote ahead of that game on Sunday in two kind of different articles, the seven keys and kind of a five players or a few players to watch quick post. I expected Stephon Tuitt to dominate in this game. I expected Ryan Shazier to have a good game. And I say that because the Browns' interior three on their offensive line are horrible. I mean, there's no Cam Irving. I mean, absolutely horrible. Drango, absolutely horrible. And even though Cam Hayward, is out for the season, missing this game, I still expected those two players to have good games, and they did. They really, really did. Shazier had seven total tackles, and I think I calculated six of those resulted in unsuccessful plays. But everything else surrounding it, I found myself wanting a little bit more. And you say, man, you're crazy. This team had eight sacks, But look, it's not to say that there wasn't other good individual defensive performances throughout the game. I just felt like I was short-changed a little bit. And now on the offensive side of the ball, I really felt that. I mean, you really had some dominance, I thought, on the offensive line. Le'Veon Bell obviously had a good game, great game, I should say, over 200 all-purpose yards from scrimmage. but you know, you didn't punch in those red zone opportunities when you needed to, that could really put your foot on the throat of the Browns early on. And we saw what kind of effect that had on the Kansas City Chiefs several weeks ago. And just little things, you know. Is there another receiver not named Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell? But I guess in general what I'm saying is, look, I'm thankful for the win. I'm not ready to declare this team fixed or the defense, marginally better than it was coming into the game. And there's some questions on offense. I mean, did that make sense?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I feel like is the Browns converted five for five in fourth downs. And Alex can look this up. I had him look up another stat last night on Pro Football Reference. Dave, let me ask it this way. Do you think there has been a game in NFL history where one team went exactly 5 for 5 on fourth downs?
Wow, I mean, there's been a lot of games played in the NFL, David. So I just as a default, my gut opinion says yes.
Okay, and that's probably the right answer too. But I probably put the odds on that at 50-50 because that's a lot of fourth down conversions and without missing one. And how many times? And I don't have this in front of me. I'll go through the play log later. I haven't had a chance yet. How many times did the Browns convert a play that was 3rd and 7 or greater? And how many of those were 3rd or 4th and 15 or greater? I mean, because of a penalty call or whatever. I mean, it was crazy. The Steelers played well defensively, but they couldn't get off the field a bunch of times and gave up big conversions. So that, for me, was the frustration on the defensive side. The offensive side was pretty simple. I mean, you have 3 drives like you have, and you go in 14-0, and you feel bad about it because, you know, it's not 38-0. But you only touched the ball 3 times, and you did score all 3 times. The second half, the 3 and outs, that was a little troubling with performance. Again, I mean, if people want to talk about it, Ben's performance was absolutely average. He made some good plays. He missed some plays. You look at the numbers, you know, his passer rating, kind of 75, kind of in line with how he's played on the road. The weather conditions were certainly a part of it. He was perfectly fine. He did what he did needed to do to win the game. This was obviously the Le'Veon Bell game, and he was excellent. But again, you know, they didn't convert. You know, and they came into the game 4th in the NFL in red zone conversion for touchdowns at 68%. Well, you go 1 for 4 against a team that, you know, most perceive is not good, rightly so, when you come in at 0-10. And yeah, they're frustrations. It certainly wasn't a perfect game. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, you talked about 3rd downs in this game. It looks like 15 total 3rd down plays in this game. And how many I'm trying to
converted 4, I think they did.
Yeah, 4 or 5 I think.
And then they had 4 first downs by penalty, and then they had 5, you know, fourth down conversions.
What did I say? 15 total 3rd down plays, and let's see, they converted 4 of them, and the 4 that they converted, a 2 3rd and 6 ones. Now these these are not penalty resulted ones. They converted 2 3rd and 6 plays. One was the 36-yard pass to Terrell Pryor deep down the right side with Ross Cockrell in coverage. And let's see, pass short middle in the 3rd quarter to Duke Johnson. That's the one I think that Lawrence Timmons had to come across and then pick him up and then try to change directions on. That one was good for 22 yards. A 3rd and 10 in the 4th quarter, early in the 4th quarter when McCown hit Duke Johnson for 20 yards. And then another one a few plays later, I guess, in the 4th quarter when McCown hit Gary Barnridge for the 14-yard touchdown with Artie Burns in coverage. So, yeah, and then the 4th down ones. What do you remember when those 4th down ones took place, David?
Two of them in the last drive. They all took place in the second half. One was, I think, a 4th. You know, just thinking about the plays that were frustrating. One, you had the Artie Burns hands to the face mask. That was like a 3rd and 17 or something. And Artie gets called for that in the first half. They get a 1st down. The touchdown return by Sean Davis gets called back because Daniel McCullers pops McCown, I guess, in the head. And it was, you know what? It's the right call. It was a correct call. And so those are the frustrations. I mean, you get another defensive touchdown in that game, or, you know, they call the hold on James Harrison when Joe Thomas tackles him. That happened on their touchdown drive. I mean, some of those things happen, and you walk away and you feel fine. If this game ended up 24-3, or if it ended up 31-9, I think we'd have a little bit better taste. But, yeah, they didn't get – there was no cherry on top of the sundae. There wasn't even whipped cream. It was just some vanilla ice cream.
All right, now 5 for 5 on fourth down. Three – I'm looking at these right now, David. Three of those happened in the fourth quarter with 2:16 or less – left in the game. I can excuse those, and I say that because of the fact of the point differential at the time and the fact that you just don't want to give up a home run ball over your head. So I'm willing to turn my head for three of those. Another one happened with 10:43 left in the third quarter when that's the one, 4th and 9, when Kessler went deep to Pryor down the left side for 26 yards. And then the other one was a 4th and 9 with 13:30 left when McCown hit Gary Barnage for 9 yards and Lawrence Timmons tackled him. So I found if you wouldn't even brought up fourth downs, I probably wouldn't have brought up fourth downs. But the third downs, most definitely, the way and the situations that those were converted was discouraging.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into, you know, some of the details. Injury wise, they come out clean. And by the way, if you're just tuning in and weren't aware, Mike Tomlin's already had his press conference, so we'll kind of recap that as well. But injury wise, they came out clean. The expectation was the five guys who were injured going into the game this week weren't going to play again on Thursday. He didn't close the door on anybody, but he mentioned two names, and that was Dangerfield and
Grimble.
And so they're basically, you can write off the other three. You can write off DHB, D'Angelo Williams, and Shamarcus Thomas. They're not playing Thursday. I would assume the other two guys won't play either. But they came out of this relatively injury-free. The roster moves, we didn't have a chance to talk about them. They were made on Saturday. No surprises. Cam Hayward goes to the IR, and Dave and I have been talking now for a couple weeks about, you know, is it imminent that Marcus Wheaton's going to go to the IR? The answer was yes. He goes. Maybe there was a little bit of surprise that it was Daryl Richardson who comes up, but he's a guy who knows the offense. He's been on the team. You know, you bring him up on Saturday, he's been on the practice squad. You can use him as you see fit. Without D'Angelo, it gives you a third running back available for the game and play some special teams. And so, you know, be the same thing Thursday. You may see him eventually go back through waivers into the practice squad, but no real surprises in any of that, right, Dave?
Right. And Richardson, I think if you go back to the preseason and how he did give you a little something on special teams, and, you know, he looked pretty decent with the football in his hands and with the football not in his hands, I thought, during the preseason as well, too. So I know a lot of people are anxious to see Carlos Williams. You know, someone said asked me on Twitter today, I guess this means, you know, we're not going to see Carlos Williams for the rest of the season. Hey, you got a lot of games left, and injuries can happen at any given moment, on a week-to-week basis. So never say never, and we'll see. But I think it did catch a few people maybe by surprise that Richardson was the one that got promoted over Carlos Williams. But as soon as D'Angelo Williams gets healthy, which who knows when that's going to be? Will he be ready by the Giants game? You know, who knows? Why rushing back is my thought right now, especially the way the Steelers have ended the last couple of seasons, not having healthy running backs, experienced running backs on their roster. If he's back for the Giants game, great. If he's not, maybe a week later than that. But
and the other thing is, I mean, we saw it yesterday. D'Angelo Williams is just an insurance policy now. So there's, you know, if you don't need him, you don't need him. I mean, even when he's healthy, how many touches was there's not a role for D'Angelo Williams. I mean, we've seen it. Mike Tomlin is a one back guy. He is not a, you know, running back guy, committee guy, at least when he has Le'Veon Bell. And you know, he touched it, what, 36, 37 times yesterday. So, you know, that's the way it's going to be. So, you know, you know, I just look at D'Angelo Williams as the ultimate insurance policy now, and I'm with it. No need to bring him back till you absolutely need him.
Yeah, I'd walk him around in bubble wrap, and when and if he does come back and dress for games, maybe five snaps at max. Maybe you get him out there in some two running back, you know, looks like they were doing before he went down injured, that kind of stuff. So very, very minimal playing time at best, as long as Le'Veon Bell stays healthy. And don't forget too, Williams is a heck of a pass protector. And if you can eliminate some wear and tear, a play here, a play there on Le'Veon Bell, you of course do that. But I thought the other interesting thing, Bud Dupree in 2016 debut against the Browns. One defensive snap. Now, I thought he was going to get minimal playing time, but I thought minimal being 6, 7, 8 snaps maybe. Now, of course, Tomlin's response to that after the game and again on Monday was, you know, look, the Steelers offense held the ball an entirely long period of time during the first half, and I think the Browns officially ran something like 17 to 19 offensive plays, and you know, really no reason to get Bud out there. At least he got out there and got to go through probably a normal warm up and that kind of thing. And
yeah, I gotta say, I was surprised. I thought he would have played more. I was guessing 10 to 20 snaps. Ladarius Green only 8 snaps. Thought he would have gotten more. So, you know, we'll see how both those guys go going forward. I wouldn't expect, you know, seeing Dupree what Dupree got, I'm not expecting him to get a lot of snaps against the Colts now. If you're going to go with what you went there, he's not getting any practice. I don't think he's necessarily getting healthier. I think he is healthy. So I can't see what's going to change. I think next week when they have an extended week to practice and get ready for the Giants game, that's when you're more likely to see Bud Dupree start to contribute. So that's where they are health-wise. Dave, did you like the offensive game plan? Did you like what the Steelers did in the first half? Sans, we'll get to the last couple plays, but did you look? They were able to dominate. We see what penalties can do, man. I mean, the Steelers have first, second, and one on the 9 after Le'Veon Bell goes for 9, and he creates the false start in the backfield. And that just makes it tough. I mean, you know, it's 2nd and 6. You're not really behind the chains, but you're in a condensed area. You don't have as much field to work with. And all of a sudden, you don't get the play you want on 2nd and 6. And now you're down to one player. It's a field goal, and they didn't convert and kind of went the same way the second drive.
Yeah, drive killers, especially down in the red zone. You really, really hate to see those two. Did I like the game plan? Yeah, I mean, I think we found out early on that Ben Roethlisberger wasn't going to be able to throw the football deep with the wind. I think after the game he talked about how the crosswind was kind of tough and yada yada. Here's the thing too, right now with they got to get Sammy Coates and DHB healthy and back on the field. I wrote about this I think last week and how instead of sleepless in Seattle, the Steelers are deepless in Pittsburgh. Without those two guys in the lineup, bless Kobe Hamilton's heart. He's just not a deep threat guy. He's not a guy that you'd line up and expect to run past people on the outside like DHB and Sammy Coates can do. And, of course, Sammy Coates had those, you know, those first five games. He had those, catches for good for more than, 41 yards or something along those lines. The Steelers, since that win over the Jets, have been absolutely horrible when it comes to and not just, you know, deep passes, because the deep pass in the NFL is measured 16 yards or more. I'm talking about those home run balls that Roethlisberger likes to throw 30 yards or more down the right or left-hand side, and those have been literally non-existent right now. So, and when you don't have that threat, you have to think that those safeties can maybe pinch in a little bit to the interior of the field, maybe not have to pay so much attention to up over the top on the outside. I just think it really hurts the passing game as a whole. And then when you're also not getting contributions from a guy like Ladarius Green, you know, I mean, geez, 12 snaps in his debut and then 8 in it. That's a lot of money to pay for a guy who you obviously don't have confidence in yet to be a blocker either. and really his tape from Saint.
Well, that's right. I mean, he is just a receiver. You know, he's only in there on receiving situations. So yeah, I mean, it was Chris Hubbard on blocking situations.
Yeah, you're talking about you're paying a guy $5 million to be a fourth wide receiver on what? And we don't have the charting done from the game yet, but it'd be interesting to see how many of those plays he was in on were third down plays. You know, so they have got to get him. And someone asked me, what do I think about Ladarius Green's play so far? Heck, he's only had 20 snaps. It's hard to evaluate a guy on just 20 snaps. He doesn't look, you know, and just to the, you know, naked eye off of what I have seen. He doesn't look explosive yet, you know. That kind of stuff. Now, the pass in the end zone, I thought that was nicely defended on that play. And then if you go back to the game against the Cowboys, that jump ball in the end zone, really, I have a better vertical jump than he does, you know, on that play, and that's not saying a whole heck of a lot. He didn't get up. Let's just put it that way. So, it really would be nice if they, you know, I was watching that game last night between the Redskins and the Packers, David, and Jordan Reed. Wow, if Ladarius Green could in these final, you know, six games become half the weapon that Jordan Reed is with the Redskins. Just imagine.
I'm sure Ben's thinking if anybody could become a weapon right now, that'd be helpful. And that's, you know, when you're evaluating Ben's play, you got to think about that aspect of things. And I mean, who would have thought that it's an offense that, you know, we knew it was Bell and Brown, but the ancillary pieces were supposed to be a big part of this, and they're not. They're just flat out not. None of them.
Yeah,
who
do you throw to the end zone now? I saw you
reference Jesse James during the game, and that has been effective at times. We can get into the red zone play calling, which I'm sure we'll do here in a second. But yeah, some of these guys got to play better. I don't, you know, I asked Mike again about Sammy Coates, and he said, again, this is about two broken fingers. That's the issue. I don't get it. I pointedly asked, you know, does it put him at risk on special teams? He's down there making tackles with broken fingers. And he says no. So you can go grab a guy, apparently, but you can't grab a football. I realize, you know, he said clean catches. So I guess Sammy's just having trouble catching a football with these broken fingers. I mean, I'll leave it at that. I don't know what more to say. And I don't know whether that's something that's going to get better in the next, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. But this has been, you hate to say it, but he has lost the middle of the season. I hope he doesn't lose the last third of the season after having a very good first third of the season. So, all right, Dave, let's get to the
Hold on. Let me open up this drawer and pull out my tinfoil hat here.
yeah, absolutely.
I smell a rat somewhere in there with the coach thing. You asked him if it's attention to detail today, and he denied that. And okay, yeah, if he can't catch the football, then why is he even out there for one snap? You know,
right? Because he can catch the long ball.
And then two snaps the previous week. Now, in Sammy Coates' defense, boy, he really has developed as a special teams player.
he's become Sparko Thomas.
Yeah, but I'm afraid that we shouldn't be laughing about that. He was a beast. Him and Nix, it seemed like they were the only two getting downfield, getting hands on people on special teams. And I don't know. I mean, look, I say all that jokingly. Is his hand just so heavily is it basically clubbed?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And you know, maybe we should stop the video on these tackles and take a look at it, because I don't think it is. I've not heard anybody mention it. I haven't noticed it.
If that's the case, then yes. But I mean, I would, like you said, I'm not even sure we'd be able to tell that real good by looking at the video. And if that's the case, then I understand maybe putting him out there two snaps, one snap, or something like that as a decoy or something like that. But now everybody in the brother knows that, you know, he's caught what, one pass for 4 yards since the game against the Jets.
The Jets. And by the way, just for the record, that was from Landry Jones, and at least he didn't get targeted in this game, right? So he's had 10 targets from Ben since then, 0 for 10. And I just I'll just go back to kind of thinking about the way you're thinking. I'll put my tinfoil hat on. Ben's two interceptions against Miami, Sammy Coates was the target. Now, they sure as heck didn't look like good throws from Ben. But is there more to the story?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, let me put my tinfoil hat back in the drawer here and let you get back.
All right, let me get my pitchfork out. Mike butchered the clock again at the end of the first half. Now, this was not, I say butchered, this was not egregious, but I think he made a mistake by letting, again, 40 seconds run off. And again, we talk about this, wanting your quarterback to have timeouts. I think it's a very different situation when you have all three timeouts versus, one or two timeouts. Because with 240, they got the ball back with 151 left after the repunt where they gained like 20 yards. And by the way, Mike chewed Danny Smith out, and Danny should have – I mean, Antonio Brown letting punts drop in these situations was crazy. He's got to be playing up closer. And that happened twice. They got a break on the second one because of the foul on Shazier. But that is bad coaching. I hate to say it. That's bad coaching. You can't have a guy back far enough that, these punts are dropping in front of him in that kind of weather. So they get the ball with 151 and three timeouts, Dave. Now, that's plenty of time, I think, in normal conditions. But in this kind of weather conditions where, Ben's clearly not trying to throw the ball down the field and he's throwing checkdowns and basically, he looked in the deep middle of the field one time and got Antonio Brown, and I was jumping up and down with pom-poms. They got down there, and the whole point is the untied down stuff. They finished on second down. He would have had 40 more seconds. They would have had more chances. They wouldn't have had to go through the decisions they made at the end of the game. Now, obviously, things can play out differently if you rerun the scenario and you have 40 more seconds. The point is, if he calls that timeout with 2:40, the Steelers end up getting the ball back with 2:20. You get to use the 2-minute warning as a timeout, which they didn't get to use. So you actually get the timeout back. It wasn't a good decision. It wasn't a terrible decision, but it wasn't the right decision. So it bugs me. Now, the question of the going for it on the untimed down, we're going for it with 5 seconds left. And this was the first question I asked at the presser, Dave. And I'll say this way. I liked them going for it on the untimed down. I liked them going for it with 5 seconds left. I did not like Mike's answer to my question. And in that case, if that was his answer, then I don't like that they went for it. And for those who didn't hear it, basically, I said, there's 5 seconds left. It's second down. Doesn't really matter. There's 5 seconds left for the Steelers. I said to Mike, is the number one priority, A, to score a touchdown, or B, to run a play in less than 5 seconds to make sure that, obviously, you have another opportunity to put points on the board? And he said to score a touchdown, and I was shocked. Because for me, the number one thing there is Ben should look at one guy. He's open, throw it to him. He's not open, whistle it 5 feet over his head.
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking about this a little bit earlier, and it's interesting that you framed it that way now, because I thought about the same thing, and I've thought about this since yesterday. I originally my original thought was WTF. With 5 seconds left, and I say that because you're up 6-0, your offense has just driven, has possessed the football, on all three possessions, an extremely long amount of time. Your defense isn't playing awful. You have a chance to make it a two possession game with what I consider a virtual guaranteed field goal, but as we saw yesterday in the NFL, what's a guaranteed extra point or field goal anymore? But with that said, with 5 seconds left, I would have trotted Boswell out there. Now, I have thought about this more, and I was thinking, okay, 5 seconds left. Now, had Ben maybe gotten up under center or something and ran a fade or a quick slant or something that the ball's either going to be caught or hit the ground with 1 second remaining. It had that been the play call that we seen and that ultimately play out that way, I would have been fine with running the play with 5 seconds. Okay.
Me too.
But in general, heading into that, not knowing what the play call was going to be, not knowing what the outcome was going to be, knowing the fact that it would have been a two-possession game, knowing the fact that your offense had what was the possession? 16 plays, 11 plays, and oh yeah, you get the ball back first in the to start the second half, and you have to assume that you're going to drive, that your offense is going to drive the field again, only this time for a touchdown. I would have trotted Boswell out there for the field goal. So it's interesting that you framed it the way that you did, because the only way I would have been fine post sending the offense back out there was if they ran a play that would have taken 4 seconds or less.
Right. So, okay. Now, how does that jibe with me saying that I liked them going for it on the untimed down? Well, if I have my mind right, Dave, they did actually gain a yard, right, on one of those penalties, the penalty in the end zone, the first time.
Right, it's a half a distance. Right. So.
Right. So it wasn't the two, right?
The second play was at the one, right? The second
right. The second one, right? So for me, I this is what I wanted. I wanted them to run the ball. So I liked them going for it, and I liked the play call because I wanted them to run. I have now no confidence in their red zone passing right now. We saw them not convert the 4 2-point conversions against Dallas. We've seen them score touchdowns and lots of them. But they have scored lots of them from not inside 5 yards. They have that would be another thing to take account on. Steelers probably have 25 touchdowns on the year. How many of those have come outside of 5 yards, 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards? That's probably an interesting thing to look at, breakdown, because they're not just getting, you know, going down the field and then, you know, punching it in from 5 yards out. So I like the aggressiveness. I can't believe Ben wasn't told, we're going to give you a shot at it, but you got to get this play done in 4 seconds, which down there from the 2-yard line, you could do. You just take the snap and you look at one guy, second guy, whistle it through the uprights. I mean, that's it. You bang. And that's, you know, you can do that. But he broke to his right. And as soon as he broke to his right, you knew that was it.
Yeah. And Ben said during his post game press conference that as far as that run goes, they initially, I think Todd Haley had called a pass play, and Ben lobbied and said the offensive line wants to run this thing in, and that in so many words he convinced them to go with a run on that 1 yard score by Le'Veon Bell. David, can you only imagine if they did?
Oh.
Can you only imagine?
He absolutely crucified. Crucified. Oh,
hey, and not only that, he went. Now look, I'm more fine with the decision to go for two after you got the touchdown. Okay, I mean that's I think that's an obvious at that point, right? I mean, I'm fine with going for two after you.
Well, right, and as I've said, I'd do it after every first half touchdown, regardless. So I'm always.
I can only imagine if they hadn't scored there and went in at halftime at 6-0.
Twitter was apoplectic.
Oh,
as
yeah,
it was.
I didn't want to even look at it because I was adding in a couple of WTFs as well too. I think I posted somebody called 911 because my chest hurts, something along those lines. But look, I understand kinda why he did it. I don't want to believe that he's doing it for the wrong reasons. You know? Does that make sense? Like,
well, you don't, because he's being an arrogant SOB.
Yeah, in so many words.
You know, I will say, thoughtfully non-rhythmic, it gets a bit tiresome because I like logic. So my thought behind all of this stuff is all the 2-point conversion stuff is just math. It's math and the fact that this team, you know, going into Dallas was 14 of 17 over the past 3 years. I mean, this is straightforward stuff. I feel less comfortable now that they don't have the weapons and that, you know, nobody else has developed. So I still trust in Ben, and you flex out, you know, Le'Veon Bell, and you have AB, although, you know, we can argue about whether he's a huge red zone threat. or a huge two-point conversion threat, more specifically. But yeah, you know, I still like him going for it.
Let me tell you this: he dang sure better go for it on other situations, regardless. You know, deep down there, fourth and goal, or whatever. He better stick with his, you know, aggressiveness, barring locusts and fires and old friend.
Well, but there hasn't been any pattern to it. I mean, it's just been, you know, the past two games. He wasn't aggressive the first 8 weeks of the season.
You know, an old friend came in from out of town. I had a flat tire. You know, there better be some legitimate reasons, not doing it going forward. I mean, he's a very aggressive coach. I mean, as a whole, I mean, he makes agree or disagree throughout the season and really, I don't know, last two or three, he makes some decisions that are uncharacteristic of 90% of the rest of the coaches in the NFL, right? Not named Pete Carroll or Riverboat Ron.
Absolutely, and I think people understand that. That's what, you know, one of my favorite characteristics about him.
Right, and look, I mean, do I expect? I guess I should rephrase that. I expect him to be somewhat consistent at what he's doing.
I agree, and I agree with you that he is not consistent.
I think he is somewhat consistent, though, personally. In fact,
yeah, I don't. The thing is, if you had to guess after every touchdown so far this year, are they going for two or not? I guarantee you, we wouldn't be right half the time. So that means they're, you know, we can't. And being thoughtfully non-rhythmic on two-point conversions doesn't make any sense. It makes sense on third down and three, whether you're going to run and pass, you know, not doing the same thing all the time. But whether you're going or not, I mean, the other team isn't game planning on whether you're going for two or not. They're game planning on whether you're running the ball or passing the ball, and then they're going to play the play. They're not game planning. So there's nothing, there's no point to thoughtfully non-rhythmic from a, you know, that's like being thoughtfully non-rhythmic whether you're going to defer or take the ball on the opening kickoff. Who cares? I mean, it's going to influence the game for sure, but nobody's game planning against you doing that.
Here's what I wrote immediately after time.
Did that make any sense?
Yeah. Here's what I wrote, and tell me if I worded this right. I think I did, but don't just cherry pick it. Listen to the whole thing. Even if you didn't like Tomlin's decision at the end of the first half, you have to hand it to him when it comes to him consistently being aggressive in situations where most other NFL coaches probably wouldn't.
I would put him in the top quartile for sure.
Did I word that right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's two-point conversions. It's, what are the decisions that a head coach has to make that impact the game that we look at as being aggressive? It's just two things, right? Fourth downs and two-point conversions. Are there other things?
I'm sure we could come up with a list, but those are the things that, you know, timeouts and clock management and all that stuff we could.
Yeah, so, yes, I think that's a fair wording of it. And you know, I think he butchered the clock. I didn't want to go into it today in the press conference. I mean, obviously, it was a short week and everything else. And he's just not going to agree with me. So it is what it is. But, you know, he left his quarterback with three timeouts. I'll just say, you get to control the flow of the game on offense. The only way you control the flow of the game on defense is with timeouts. They could have used one there when they're punting and giving themselves 40 seconds. Okay, second half. What happened to the offense in the second half?
Yeah, good question. You know, they you had three and outs.
Yeah, and you know, did they get too conservative here? And by the way, Dave, I should let our listeners know that we are we've got a little mortgage ad to read here that our buddy Craig Octane is the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. That is one of my favorites. Let Craig guide you through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in what we got this week, Indy. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Octane, a call. By the way, he'll be at the game on Thursday if you want to do it in person. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Octane today, 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craigandblackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
We're talking about the second half. Remember that they opened up with that offensive holding call right at the first play. So you're behind the chains, you know, right away on your first play of the second half. And then, you know, you pass short right to Antonio Brown, and then you failed to incomplete, which I thought maybe – did you think – was that the play that Kobe Hamilton may have been interfered on the second and 17 play? Or am I thinking of another player? But anyway, you got behind the chains during that first possession of the second half, so no wonder they kind of went three and out there.
Yes, and then you know the thing is it became a little bit run pass, right? I mean, I'm trying to remember the two fourth quarter possessions, and I don't have a play sheet in front of me.
The second possession, they open up with a pass to Bell. Then I think they went Bell off left tackle for seven. They had a nice drive.
I'm talking the two fourth quarter possessions.
Oh, the two fourth quarter possessions. Yeah, they they opened up with their first possession of the fourth quarter with a pass to Antonio Brown for 3 yards, which that was basically, wasn't that the quick slant over to the left?
That was a check with me.
Yeah, that's a run game alternative right there if I ever saw one. Le'Veon Bell right tackle for 2 yards, and then the incompleted pass over the middle to Jesse James on third and five. So, you know, that's a three and out there, and then their which I guess was ultimately their final possession of the game. It was Bell
pass deep to AB, no interference.
Yeah,
call,
no interference
right?
call. So I mean, I understand burning clock with two runs there. So yeah, I'm not. I don't want to crucify them for those two fourth quarter three and outs.
Okay, so let's talk about the defense.
No, Timmons is not being moved to outside linebacker.
I asked Mike that at the press conference, too. Hey, you're bringing Lawrence Timmons off the edge. That seemed to work. Maybe you should do
it
some more of that.
It works damn good when nobody blocks him or you have a running back try to block him. Nope.
Yep.
Everybody tends to forget about several years ago when James Harrison missed time and who was it? I think
that was a long time ago.
Worlds missed time, and Lawrence Timmons had to fill in for what, three games or four games at outside linebacker. Go back and watch that tape and come back at me and tell me you want Lawrence Timmons to play outside linebacker.
So we had a little bit of a Lawrence Timmons conversation in the post game last night, and somebody was calling up to say, you know, Lawrence Timmons played great, and Charlie said, thank you for saying that. I've been saying that for weeks. I said, okay, look, we'll agree to disagree. Here's what I think about Lawrence Timmons. Lawrence Timmons around the line of scrimmage, I'm perfectly fine with. And, I get it. What the Steelers want to do in their offense is get Le'Veon Bell on linebackers. You want to get Duke Johnson on Lawrence Timmons. You want to get Tyler Eifert on Lawrence Timmons. That's what you want. So the question is, how do you scheme defensively to make sure that doesn't happen? Well, how about you do? You have Lawrence Timmons attack the line of scrimmage on most downs and have him be run blitzing or pass blitzing. And while the big plays are disturbing, I really honestly would rather see that than what we saw the first 7 weeks of the season. I think philosophically they have changed. They're letting Shazier do things. I mean, holy cow. But does anybody bull rush better than Ryan Shazier? I mean, the guy only weighs, what, 230 maybe. And he is just running over. He's running over guard. Well, again, you pointed it out at the beginning. The interior of the Cleveland line is awful, but he was just walking guys back in the Denver games. He was walking, running guys back into the quarterback. I mean, he is impressive coming at it. So I like the way they employed those two guys yesterday. Some off the edge, some up the middle. But keep bringing them as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I like, you know, they'll run that four-man front and leave one of the linebackers off the line of scrimmage, you know, and stack, you know, kind of run a stack in there. And I like the fact that what they did with Timmons. The fact that Hugh Jackson didn't adjust to that's pretty surprising. You know, because they did it more. I think Alex pointed this out on the site earlier today. You know, the Steelers, it just wasn't a one time and off type of thing there. So they, you know, it's good to see him get creative like that. And I thought Timmons, look, yeah, he did have the hit on Cody Kessler, and I know
which is bad call. He didn't hit him.
I still haven't seen an angle that leads me to believe that, unless I missed an angle going back.
Well, I I'm with you in that answer. But as I said at the time, I said I don't think he hit him. You watch the play, and the ref gets right in the way of the replay from the end zone replay down at ground level. But it sure doesn't look like he hit him. And Timmons said he didn't hit him, for whatever that's worth. If he hit him, it was a glancing blow. That's not what knocked Kessler out of the game. And it'll be interesting to see if he gets fined. I mean, we'll see the all 22. We'll get a look at it.
And Timmons had the illegal hand. What else did he get called for? Illegal hands to the face, I think.
He did, and I did not see that play. I was in my car, so I actually haven't seen it again. But man, how about the penalties this year? The Artie Burns one, the McCullers one that cost him the touchdown. I mean, that was a good call. He hit him in the head. Hit him in the head.
Going back to the deep pass to Pryor with Cockrell in coverage. If that ball was not intended to be underthrown, right?
On the prior play, I'll tell you, if it was, then that's an awfully good job of them syncing up really quickly, because it was hand fighting. The criticism of Cockrell's obviously going to be he didn't get his head around, but it was not offensive pass interference. Pryor just stopped. He was able to stop quicker, and he didn't push off. So I thought it was all clean. I'm guessing you're right. He didn't intend to underthrow it. That's the advantage of having your head.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, though, Cockrell's thinking this ball is going to go up over his head. So I'm a little less lenient, I guess, is what I'm saying when it comes to that. Hey, here's a good thing. He kept them out of the end zone, right?
He did.
And it mattered. So, I want to go back and look at that and dissect that play a little bit more. But I'm a little less forgiving, being as how that football was delivered and what I think that Cockrell thought he was, the timing and everything that goes involved. I don't think he was thinking that ball was going to be that underthrown, on that situation. Now, Artie Burns, the big question is, what's your evaluation of Artie Burns? Look, he's one step forward, one step back, right? He's
half step back. One step forward, half step.
Yeah, I'm still going to call it full. I mean, the missed tackle, him and Timmons early. He just got to read that touchdown better, and he can't let that happen on that one to Barnage either as well, too. Made a great interception. Look, I'm never going to not stand up and clap my hands for a player. It looked too early in the game. It looks like he's trying to be a more physical player.
I agree.
It looks, with the illegal hands to the face, I can accept that if you're trying to get a.
Yeah, it's just, it's just unlucky. I mean, you're trying to pop the guy in the chest, and, look, you got to just keep working on technique and keep teaching it. And I guess we probably shouldn't be forgiving. You say stand up there and pop him in the chest. Don't pop him in the head. I hate to say it happens. It sounds like a terrible response, but
I'll
that's
continue
what
to say this about him and Sean Davis is what I said a few weeks ago. They're playing, they're getting a lot of experience, and if you can win with them doing it like the Steelers did this past on Sunday, then even more better here. They're going to still make mistakes. They're not finished.
Oh, how about Sean Davis on the blitz?
Yeah, gotta make that.
You can't. I mean, you cannot whiff on that. If nothing else, you got to get it. You got to break down and get a piece of them, because I mean that is he won't have a cleaner look except for the one. I mean, the other play he got picked off on the touchdown, right? Duke Johnson just got him, stepped in and just got him by an edge and gave good on McCown to stand in there and make that throw, whether Johnson was going to get him or not. But he got picked off on that one. But he's got to get home on that one.
You get a shot like that off the edge, you definitely got to get the quarterback in those. So, look, I mean, I think the best way to judge Artie Burns right now and Sean Davis the rest of the year is just give him incompletes, you know, because they're just going to need some time. You know, they obviously have some faith. How much faith versus you just got to get them out there? Where's that?
I think there's a lot of faith. I really do. And I think I have more of it right now than you do, and maybe that's not deserved. But I like that they're out there. I like what that means for the next couple of years that they're out there now. I love the fact of thinking about, you know, nobody wants to talk about next year, but I love the fact of thinking about next year when those guys come to camp and you say, okay, here's three of our starting secondary. We know who the two safeties are. You know, Burns is going to be one corner. I assume Cockrell will be the other. And then, you know, you're keeping William Gay around. Is Cinquez Golson going to make the team? What's going to happen with Justin Gilbert? But I really feel like it means the Steelers don't need to go draft a secondary. I mean, a secondary guy. Maybe in the sixth or seventh round they take a safety. But if you like Dangerfield a little bit, you can bring Golden back cheap. You have all your secondary guys. And that's like this is a position of huge weakness. I'm not going to say it's a position of strength yet, but it's no longer a position of need.
Well, here's the thing, too. It goes back to what Kevin Colbert said initially about Artie Burns. A bump-and-run corner is what he does best coming out of Miami. And it's good to see him use that way. I mean, how many times have us and listeners and everybody
year 7 episode 44, so I would say at 250 episodes a year, 1500.
Yeah, you know, don't want these corners playing off so much, giving up those easy throws. We're seeing less easy throws given up on first downs, right, for the most part.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Okay,
yes.
So, you know, make the quarterbacks hold the football a little bit. Make them decide to run maybe a little bit more. And if they're going to complete a pass, make the quarterback earn it, you know, kind of thing. So I think that's one thing that we're starting to see more and more of with this defense. More cover one, more cover two, as opposed to cover three with these guys laying off. However, Burns' weakness still is him playing off the ball.
Yes. Yeah. I like him up being, you know, look, if you have guys who can do it, Pitt doesn't, but if you have guys who can do it, yeah, hell yeah, play bump and run, man. All day long.
All right, so, you know, as far as the play of the defensive line and all against the Browns, look, eight sacks is eight sacks. I mean, they are what they are. Like I said, I expected Shazier to dominate. I expected Stephon Tuitt to dominate. They did. Now, they're going to be
– How about our boy Ricardo getting a TFL for first play of the game?
Yeah, really like that as well, too. And I think Mike Tomlin had a little bit of praise for him and LT Walton, even though LT Walton snaps were as a result of the game situation late, and Browns had the ball, 17 plays on that final drive and yada, yada. But here's the thing now. You're going to be playing a Colts team on Thursday on a short week with Mike Adams at right tackle.
Really? Is that true?
I'm sorry. Not Mike Adam.
He's in Chicago,
I'm thinking,
right?
Who am I thinking of? Their right tackle is just absolutely. I can't. I'm drawing a blank real quick.
I had quite a visual there, though.
I'm drawing a blank as to who their right tackle. But their whole offensive line as a whole really hasn't been good. They've been injury.
35 sacks leading the league, right?
Yeah, Andrew Luck's 30. I don't know why Mike Adams is on, because I was watching a little bit of that game before we got on here. But let me pull this up real quick here. Right. Anthony Costanzo. And Hague. Hague's the guy I'm thinking of at right tackle. You have good at right guard, Kelly at center, and Jack Mehort at left guard. They've been atrocious at times. It's a wonder Dick LeBeau and his bunch were only able to sack Luck, I think, twice. I saw watching that game there. But regardless, what I'm trying to say is this is a Colts offensive line that, much like the Browns offensive line. Look, at least the Browns had Joe Thomas, right? I mean.
Although, you know, as Joe Thomas, have we seen the beginning and the end? Is Joe Thomas, you know, I mean, it's tough when you got four guys around you who can't play. So, you know, who knows? But he did get hit, and you know, a little bit on the flea flicker. It's not a straight blocking play. Obviously, you're trying to scheme things to allow guys to do certain things. You want to bring him on the inside to attack down on the running back. That's what you want Harrison to do there. But he got around it. But yeah, I mean, I didn't notice Thomas really one way or the other than that play, to be honest with you.
Yeah, was that Thomas who hauled Debo down?
No. Well, yeah, it was Thomas who held Debo down, but it was not Thomas who
got run
over.
That was Drango on the sack. But
I don't remember.
Something wants me. I'll have to go back and look at that. I didn't think that was Thomas that hauled down Debo on that on that flea flicker there. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm confusing it with something else there. But what about Debo? Huh? We haven't said anything about him.
Good for him. Good for him. I mean, you know, he went in and we've seen this before. We saw the Indy game last year. You put a bad player in front of him, he's going to dominate him. I mean, it's pretty simple. If he can use his strength and leverage on a bad player, he's going to beat him. Now, I'll tell you, Joe Thomas has owned Harrison over the last, you know, he's owned everybody, so no big deal. I'll tell you one thing, Dave. I was in the post game, and I was talking to Charlie, and we weren't on it. We were just chatting in between during a break, and I said, I don't remember Jarvis Jones being on the field. And when I looked at the snap counts and he played 27 snaps, I can't tell you one play I remember him doing something.
I remember one that Joe Thomas tossed him to the side.
Do you remember one where he was a positive
not
influence?
Really. Jarvis ended up playing the same amount of snaps as Debo, I think, in the game.
I thought it was like 33 and 27 or whatever it was, but I was surprised. What do you think of Chicolo? You know, Moats gets a sack and a half. You know, these guys.
Chicolo needs to keep his. Chicolo was chipped one time. I thought, how the heck do you get off your feet? How the heck are you knocked off your feet like that? Chicolo just got to do a. Look, we said it. He's a backup. That's the best way to say it. I think he can be a decent backup, okay? But I think that's all he is right now, at least from what I've seen. Jarvis Jones, 33 snaps. Debo, 33 snaps. But I guarantee you, when we chart this thing, a lot of Jarvis sacks are going to come in that 17 play.
Snaps, because there were not a lot of sacks.
Yeah, snaps. Snaps came in that 17 play final drive there. Hey, props to Tomlin getting some of them guys out of that game too. Got two of it out of the game. It might not seem a lot.
It matters. I agree. And he should do it on the offensive side next time. You get your quarterback out of there.
Yeah, if only we could get.
We saw Aaron Rodgers take a seat last night.
Yeah, only we could get in more situations where that happens. Robert Golden, 4 snaps. Ricardo Matthews, 20 snaps. LT Walton, 22. Arthur Motes, 27. Look, plain and simple, we're going to break down this game a little bit more. Who are we going to have? Our buddy Phil, right, who covers the Colts, Steelers guy?
Yeah, that's a good idea. And, how about you triggered something there with me with the guys you were talking about. Golden, who else did you mention there? Walton.
Moats.
How about our boy Hugh Jackson calling timeout with 2 seconds left? Think anybody in Vegas was paying attention?
Maybe.
Where did that close? I saw it was 7.5 Friday. I didn't see where it closed on Sunday. Did it get 10?
I think it was
9?
Like 8.5, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we were talking. We're squarely in the bullseye.
Yeah, absolutely. Back door, here you come. Okay, I mean, did we leave anything out here?
No. Just Steelers Nation, mortgage rates currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or just refinance, call our buddy Craig Octane, First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steelers fan, Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help you out. You can call him at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320-399 Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
A few quick minutes here. The Bengals are in trouble right now. They lost A.J. Green. They lost Giovanni Bernard, their top two pass catchers. Plus, they didn't win on Sunday. Go ahead and stick a fork in them.
Now, let me ask you a question, because I got in this last night on Twitter, and somebody said, you know, I was playing devil's advocate, so whatever the argument was going to be, I was going to take the other side about Marvin Lewis and whether he's done. Let me just ask you this, though, because people love to look at, you know, some of Mike Tomlin's detractors love to talk about the last 5 years. And you say, okay, well, why is it five? Why isn't it six? Because six would be a Super Bowl, because five is, you know, five works for the argument. Marvin Lewis has made the playoffs the last 5 years, right?
Is it four or five?
Okay, let's, for argument's sake, say it's the last 5 years. He has zero playoff wins. Mike Tomlin's made the playoffs three of the last 5 years. He has one playoff win. Who's done a better job?
Man, you put me on the spot like this.
It's not easy because you know, we want to count. Look, I think getting in the playoffs should the Bengals fire Marvin Lewis? I don't have a great answer, but we all say it's a quarterback-driven league. He hasn't had a franchise quarterback yet. He's gotten a team. He's had good teams, man. He had a good team last year, and who knows if Dalton stayed healthy, how that would have gone. But he's had good teams. But he's gotten them to the playoffs five straight years. There's something to say for that. And you know, he's had injuries this year to Eifert, and you lose your starting two receivers, and you're kind of retooling around the cap. I'm just not going to say carte blanche he should be fired now. Will they fire him? You know, I don't know. I think we should, when we have more time, we should get into that discussion.
Boy, if anything, undisciplined and unaccountable in that wild card game last year, right? So,
and if you think that's rampant in the organization kind of week to week thing, then that is a good enough reason. Now, let me ask you one. What if, you know, yesterday a lot of people were upset, as we talked about, and we had a lot of this in the post game about the Steelers and who they were playing. And how you said, I like the term, I'm going to use it on my show, it was a no-win-win. Okay, how about this? What if the Steelers had played the Browns twice already and not played Dallas or New England yet? And they played Dallas yesterday. Because that's what Cleveland's done. And when you look at the records, the Ravens came in at 5-4 and the Steelers were 4-5. Well, I'm pretty sure that the Steelers are going to beat the Browns twice. And we know they lost to the other two teams. So if the scheduling had been different, with the whole tenor of the Steelers season, if they were 6-3 going into that game yesterday against Dallas, and the Ravens, having played both those teams and lost, instead of being 5-4, they're 3-6. Can you imagine how different the conversation would be just because of the way the season has been scheduled?
Yeah, possibly. I don't want to get into Tom and hype.
The theoreticals?
Hypotheticals. We don't deal with hypotheticals. Only when it...
The point is the Ravens have a tough schedule. If the Steelers go 5-1, they're winning the division. If the Steelers go 6-0, they're obviously winning the division, and they may get a bye. And I would go so far as to say if they go 4-2 and beat the Ravens, they probably win.
Yeah, here's the Ravens' rest of their schedule. Bengals, Dolphins, Patriots, Eagles, Steelers, Bengals. Boy, that Christmas Day game could wind up being for you bring your marbles, I'll bring my marbles.
Yeah, the Steelers' next three games, we're going to find. Yeah, here's the one last thing about the defense. We're way over, but you know, the defense has played the last 4 weeks. They've played two of the best, you can say, maybe the two best offenses in the league, or two of the best in Dallas and in New England, and they've played two of the worst in Cleveland and Baltimore, and they've played exactly how you would expect. The next 3 weeks, the Steelers are going to play three, you know, average to good teams in Indy, Giants, and Buffalo. We're going to find out who the Steelers are the next
week. Well said. We'll begin breaking this down with the game against Indy on Wednesday. And I'm sure we bashed Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger way too much for several people's likings on this show today. And I'm sure we're all we are cronies for and work for the Steelers organization in our defense of Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler in this episode as well, too. If you have all those kind of issues, and we sure you you do, you can email them to us, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And if we feel like getting back to you, we will. In all seriousness, folks, thanks for listening to the podcast. You can follow me. We just like to have a little bit of fun sometimes. You can follow me on Twitter @SteelersDepot. You can follow David on Twitter @DavidMTodd. You can follow the show @TerriblePodcast. As I said, you can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you feel sorry for our sorry analysis, you can make a donation. Maybe it'll help us do better. You can go to SteelersDepot.com, find that PayPal button, hit the donate button in the upper right-hand side of the site. David, I look forward to getting to this Colts film and talking to our buddy on Wednesday, break down this Colts game.
Yeah, we'll figure it all out. We have something for you Wednesday, and we'll have something for you Friday. I'm working Thursday and Friday, so send turkey. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.